Blackberry set about converting the NKVD into a secret sect of sacred executioners. Yezhov dispatched Yagoda's officers to inspect the provinces, and then arrested them on the train. 3,000 Chekists were to be executed. Between the 19th and 21st of March, Yezhov summoned the survivors to the officers' club. There, the diminutive Commissar General announced that Yagoda had been a German spy since 1907, and was also a corrupt thief. "I may be small in stature, but my hands are strong. Stalin's hands. There will be some innocent victims in this fight against fascist agents. We are launching a major attack on the enemy. Let there be no resentment if we bump someone with an elbow. Better that 10 innocent people should suffer than one spy get away. When you chop wood, chips fly." Yezhov alleged that Yagoda had tried to poison him by spraying mercury onto the curtains of his office. It later emerged that Yezhov had faked this outrage. Nonetheless, Yagoda was arrested at his Kremlin apartment, even before the Politburo had formally given the order. The power of the Politburo was officially delegated to the so-called Five: Stalin, Molotov, Voroshilov, Kaganovich, and Yezhov, even though the latter was not a member. The search of Yagoda's residences revealed the debauchery of the NKVD elite in the list of his possessions. His pornographic collection contained 3,904 photographs, plus 11 early pornographic movies. His career as a womanizer was amply illustrated by the inventory of female clothing he kept in his apartment, which sounds as if he was running a lingerie store, not a police force. Finally, there was the macabre fetishism of the two labeled bullets that had been extracted from the brains of Zinoviev and Kamenev. Yezhov inherited them like holy relics. Yagoda, accused of diamond dealing and corruption, complacently implicated the next generation of victims, guided by Yezhov, who ensured that his own protégés were left out before the testimonies were sent over to Stalin. Yagoda confessed to the sprinkling of mercury around Blackberry's office. More importantly, he implicated Arbil Yanukidze for planning a coup along with Marshal Tukhachevsky, Stalin's old enemy from the Civil War. By the time of his trial, Yagoda had confessed to the medical murders of Gorky and his son, and to the assassination of Kirov. In his private hell, he knew his family and friends faced destruction with him. The rule in Stalin's world was that when a man fell, all those connected to him fell too. His brother-in-law and father-in-law were soon shot. His wife, sister and parents were exiled. His father wrote to Stalin, disowning our only surviving son for his grave crimes. Two sons had given their lives for Bolshevism in earlier times. Both parents died in the camps. Yagoda had denounced the security chief, Pauka. He was arrested, guilty of knowing too much and living too well. Besides, he was Hungarian. Stalin no longer trusted the old-fashioned Chekists with foreign connections. Pauka was shot quietly on the 14th of August 1937, the first courtier to die. Yanukidze was arrested too, and executed on the 20th of December. The NKVD now belonged to Stalin, who turned on the army. On the evening of the 1st of May 1937, after the May Day parade, there was the usual party at Voroshilov's, but the mood was effervescent with bloodlust and tension. Budioni recorded how Stalin talked openly about the imminent slaughter with his inner circle. "It was time," he said, "to finish with our enemies, because they are in the army, in the staff, even in the Kremlin." Budioni guessed that this meant Marshal Tukhachevsky, who had been standing on the mausoleum with them earlier that day. Tukhachevsky, Stalin's Civil War foe and probably his most talented general, was bound to be his main target. That refined nobleman, handsome, clever, and able, as Kaganovich described him, did not suffer fools gladly, which was why he was hated by Voroshilov and Budioni. The dashing womanizer was so forceful and charismatic that Stalin nicknamed him Napoleonchik. He was as ruthless as any Bolshevik, using poison gas on peasant rebels. In the late 20s and early 30s, this entrepreneur of military ideas advocated a huge expansion of the Red Army and the creation of mechanized forces to be deployed in so-called deep operations. He understood the era of panzers and air power, which brought him into conflict with Stalin's cronies, still living for cavalry charges and armored trains. On the 11th of May, Tukhachevsky was sacked as deputy commissar and demoted to the Volga district. On the 13th, Stalin put his hand on Tukhachevsky's shoulder and promised he would soon be back in Moscow. He was as good as his word, for on the 22nd, Tukhachevsky was arrested and brought there. Yezhov and Voroshilov orchestrated the arrest of virtually the whole high command. Stalin ordered his BlackBerry to supervise the marshal's torture. Tukhachevsky should be forced to tell everything. It's impossible he acted alone. Amidst this drama, Stalin's mother died on the 13th of May, 1937, aged 77. Stalin himself wrote out his note for her wreath in Georgian, which read, "Dear and beloved mother, from her son, Yosef Djugashvili," using his original name, perhaps, to signify the distance between Soso and Stalin. Embroiled in the Tukhachevsky plot, he did not attend the funeral. Beria, his wife and son, presided in his stead. But later Stalin asked about it, as if guilty about not being there. A few days later, a broken Marshal Tukhachevsky confessed that Yanukitza had recruited him in 1928, that he was a German agent in cahoots with Bukharin to seize power. Tukhachevsky's confession, which survives in the archives, is dappled with a brown spray that was found to be blood, spattered by a body in motion. On the 1st of June, Stalin, Voroshilov, and Yezhov gathered over 100 commanders in the Kremlin and broke the news that their high command overwhelmingly consisted of German agents. "I hope no one doubts that a military-political conspiracy existed," Stalin threatened, explaining that Tukhachevsky had been suborned by Trotsky, Bukharin, Rykov, Yanukitza, Yagoda, and Rutsutak. Officers were actually arrested during the meeting, so it was hardly surprising the survivors supported Stalin. The Supreme Court convened a special military tribunal to try the traitors. The reptilian Ulrich represented the military collegium, but the key judges were the marshals themselves. "I feel I'm dreaming," Tukhachevsky remarked of the accusations. Ominously, many of the generals were accused of serving a second motherland, Yakir being a Bessarabian Jew. Most of the judges were terrified. "Tomorrow I'll be put in the same place," one of them, Corps Commander Belov, told his friends afterwards. He was right. All were sentenced to death at 23:35 that day. Ulrich rushed over to report to Stalin, who just said, "Agreed." Yezhov returned with Ulrich to supervise the executions, which took place within the hour. As ever, Stalin was sadistically curious. "What were Tukhachevsky's last words?" Stalin asked Yezhov. "The snake said he was dedicated to the motherland and Comrade Stalin. He asked for clemency, but it was obvious he was not being straight. He hadn't laid down his arms." All the judges were later shot, except Ulrich, Budioni, and Shaposhnikov. If Budioni had any doubts about supporting the terror, the NKVD arrived to arrest him soon after the trial. He pulled out a pistol and threatened to kill the Chekists while he telephoned Stalin, who cancelled the arrest. His wife was not so fortunate. Voroshilov unleashed a massive purge of the army, personally demanding the arrests of 300 officers in letters to the NKVD. By the 29th of November 1938, Voroshilov boasted that 40,000 had been arrested and 100,000 new officers promoted. 3 of the 5 marshals, 15 of the 16 commanders, 60 of the 67 corps commanders, and all 17 commissars were shot. Stalin earnestly encouraged the witch hunt at informal meetings with officers. The army had been the last force capable of stopping Stalin. Reason enough for the destruction of its high command. It is possible that the generals knew about Stalin's record as an Okhrana, Tsarist, double agent, and had considered action. The usual explanation is that German disinformation persuaded Stalin that they were plotting a coup. But no such evidence was used at Tukhachevsky's trial, nor was it necessary. After all, Stalin had tried to destroy Tukhachevsky as early as 1930, 3 years before Hitler took power. Voroshilov was assisted in this slaughter by one man who personified the tragedy that was to befall the Red Army. Stalin and Yezhov planned the publicity with the editor of Pravda, Lev Mekhlis, one of the most extraordinary of all Stalin's courtiers, who now exploded onto the national stage, transformed from the scourge of the media to a military Mephistopheles, compared to a shark and a gloomy demon. Even Stalin called him a fanatic, found him hard to restrain, and enjoyed telling stories of his ludicrous zeal. Mekhlis first met Stalin during the Polish campaign, becoming one of his assistants, learning all the secrets. Devoted to Stalin, for whom he worked in a neurotic, blood-curdling frenzy, he was too energetic and talented to remain hidden in the back rooms like Paskryobyshev. He placed Lenin's portrait with a red ribbon in his baby's cot, and recorded the reactions of this new man in a special diary. In 1930, Stalin appointed him Pravda editor, where his management of writers was impressively brutal. Mekhlis was now promoted to deputy defense commissar, head of its political department, descending on the army like a galloping horse of the apocalypse.